now we are introducing our first guest, and our guest is Barbara Ebel.
And she's from the Nanoose Edibles Organic Farm.
So what is the benefit of saving seeds and of using heritage seeds as opposed to buying those little envelopes you see in the supermarket?
Well, those little envelopes of seeds, there is no way of knowing when they were grown or where they were grown. They can put a date on them, but unless it's a formal date, it's saying this seed was gathered and in this particular year, all that date is the date they packaged it. So you have no idea whether those seeds are truly going to grow well for you or not.
Yeah, okay.
The other thing, like people, seeds thrive best at home. So if the food that we eat should be grown as close as possible to where we live and consume it, because that's going to be the freshest and the healthiest and best suited to our bodies. Mm. Likewise with seed, the seed that you buy could be very old and could be grown far away from here, and we don't know that. So we plant it in our garden and we expect something really grand to happen, and nothing happens. Mm. And it may be that you're going to have to grow, if you particularly want that variety of seed, then you may have to hang on to that seed and replant it again for several years before it adjusts to your climate, to the cold and to the wet. It extend its season and behave like it should. So there's a great advantage to local seed. There's quite a bit to saving seed. You need a pretty nice library, few tools and equipment, and a lot of knowledge.
Is it like how to preserve them and stuff as well? Like?
Yes. Well, how you grow them. Seeds are live things. They cross-pollinate each other. Mm. So that is the one of the big problems with saving seed, is that if you can't save seeds within families, because they will cross-pollinate with each other and you'll end up with something totally wild. So there's a lot to
like
growing.
A nectarine?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
or
right.
A yellow tomato?
Yes, really. I've always been interested in the policy that goes along with the economics and the statistics of food in the region. How are we doing? Are we just talking this, or are we actually doing it? Well, we're actually just talking it.
You mean we're actually just talking that we are
local, yes,
doing our own local food?
Yes, we are. In 1950, Vancouver Island was 80% self-sufficient in food, and that would be largely organically grown food. I mean, they didn't know the name then, but that's what they were doing.
Yeah, it was just normal then.
Now, most of it's conventionally grown with pesticides, and our production rates are somewhere around 5 to 10%.
Wow. Yeah.
And so everything else comes from the United States?
And where did all those farmers go?
The land is still here, and that's what we have to celebrate.
Hmm.
The land is still here, but not for long, because you know how much land is being broken in this region right now. These farmers have sat on the land hoping that things would change for them. I don't think that they wanted to go out of farming, but if your local supermarkets won't buy it, and if only a handful of people come to the farmers' markets, and when you open your gate, you only have 10 people through it that day, you can't afford to farm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reality. And so we just need to really be honest about it. Do we want it, or do we want to pave it?
Mm.
And it seems to me at the moment, sadly, that we want to pave it.
Mm.
I think as well that people don't realize that it's not just a matter of buying an American tomato over a locally grown tomato. There's also all of the gas that is used in transporting that stuff, in storing it in the supermarket, and in you going to the supermarket, and, you know, there's a lot of oil spent in packaging and in transporting food. So when we grow it locally, we're cutting down on all of that stuff.
And getting a better product.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Well, one of the things that is done all over the, well, not all over the Western world, it started in Japan, it moved through Europe, and then it moved into North America, and that's what's called community-supported agriculture. It's a healthy box program, and our farm does one. And this is locally produced food, and the person become you go into a kind of a contract, an agreement between the purchaser and the farmer, and the farmer agrees to produce 16 or 20 weeks of produce, their very best produce. probably 12 or more things in each box once a week, same day. And the vendor and the purchaser either picks that up or has it delivered. And that's something we're involved with. We really like it. We have made wonderful friends of our of our customers who come back to us year after year. And
they, so these are individuals? These aren't, these aren't stores buying
people.
Stuff?
They pay us in advance for the season. And we try to grow for them and plan to grow for them all manner of salad crops, root crops, fruits, herbs, anything to sort of stimulate the appetite and make your food interesting and fresh and nice.
It's almost like buying bulk, but getting it fresh every time.
It is.
I guess, yeah, because you're paying in advance. Yeah. And no, that's an excellent idea.
It's, and it's as fresh. It's picked within 24 hours of the pickup of that box.
Oh.
And it's delivery, or people have to pick it up?
It's delivered to a drop-off point.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, myself included, didn't know that that was necessarily available, and it was that like that it was going that well. And
that's an excellent idea.
Yeah.
Well, we have cousins in Eugene, Oregon, and we were just astonished. I think every other person in Eugene, Oregon, is on a box brew.
Oh.
It's just amazing. Farms, we picked up a lot of brochures because we went to one of their presentation events, and the local church is there handling it as a public service, and the cutoff date for them is the 31st of January. So, and quite a few of the brochures we looked at said sold out for this year on them. So, I mean, it's amazing. The farmland all around Eugene is just blossoming with product.
Wow.
It's so exciting.
That's Eugene's kind of a cool area. It's there's a lot of interesting stuff
going on.
Quite
a progressive community, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what other stuff do you do on the farm?
Well, we have an open house policy, so anybody can come and walk about, look at what we're doing. They're just totally welcome. And then we make the farm available for community events, so a picnic or a farm tour.
Oh, are we going to talk about...
Well, I've just got a little report here on the website of the National Farmers Union. And last week we were talking about how legislation had been put through in Iraq as the Coalition Provisional Authority had left in order to prevent them from seed saving. And it's a bit complicated. And then I was shocked to find out that it was happening in Canada as well. Last year, on May 5th, the Seed Sector Review released its report of the Seed Sector Advisory Committee. So a few farmers, and I think a few citizens in general, have heard of this review, which, this is all from the National Farmers Union, is an ambitious industry-led initiative to restructure Canada's seed and grain quality assurance systems. Review participants initially identified three objectives. So the purpose of the review was regulatory flexibility and timeliness, supportive environment for science and innovation, and profitability of the sector. So that's kind of like industry speaks. And what it means is that the first objective translates into basically deregulation for the companies involved, and review documents detail plans for deregulating our seed and quality assurance systems. The third objective is refreshingly clear, basically more profit for the seed companies. And the second objective, a supportive environment for science and innovation, is basically a restatement of the first and third goals. A supportive environment for seed companies is one that's more profitable and less regulated. The Seed Sector Review proposes removing rules that protect farmers and introducing new rules designed to restrict farmers and to increase the profits of corporate seed developers such as Monsanto and a dwindling number of seed growers. So basically the National Farmers Union made a bit of a summary of what 9 points they thought that farmers should be aware of. So I'll just quickly go over those. Number one would be collect royalties on farm-saved seeds. And explanations of these points that farmers should be aware of is on the National Farmer Union website, which is just nfu.ca. Number two, compel farmers to buy certified seed. Number three, terminate the right of farmers to sell common seed. This isn't something that was explicitly in there, but it's leaning towards it. Number four, replace the kernel visual distinguishability, which is KVD, which is, I'm not going to go into what all these things are, but number five, removal of merit as a registration requirement. Number six, paving the way for new GM crops, that's genetically modified crops. Number seven, more powerful seed companies and more expensive seed. Number eight, a fundamental tightening of the rules governing seed. And number nine, basically farmers losing control. So there's far more stuff if you want more information on the website, but I don't know, as an organic farmer yourself, what sort of comments you might have on it. Or
it was a main, we were at the COABC, Certified Growers Association of British Columbia. These are for organic organic farmers for all of British Columbia. Lots of important people there. And I think everybody was just stunned and horrified that they had pushed it this far without going through a public process of any description. This thing is just happening without input from ordinary folk. I mean, it's absolutely shocking.
Yeah, I've heard that the Canadian Food Inspection Agency has just basically put up a website.
That's right.
And that's the only thing that people have to, the only public input they're seeking.
Yeah.
I mean, not everyone has access to the web, although we always give references to it. But yeah, and that's going to close on March 8th, apparently.
That's right. Yeah. So I don't think there's a good understanding between politicians and bureaucrats and corporations and the actual farmer that grows our food.
Mm.
The food that is essential to us in the same way that water and land and air, food.
Yeah.
Those are the things we need. But if you're going to be responsible for growing this food, then you should have some rights of deciding how they should be grown.
Yeah, what you were saying, like they often create these conditions where certain things will happen, so they don't need to necessarily say, do this or else. They just create the financial and economic conditions so that farmers have no other choice. Like the number two of this thing to look at with these amendments being made, it's saying that we're compelling farmers to buy certified seed. I guess that's from the bigger corporations. Mm-hmm. It says that the report lists ways that farmers could be encouraged to purchase more certified seed, which would, they could, one of them is to link crop insurance premiums with the use of certified seed. So it would require higher premiums from farmers who don't use the certified seeds, which is irrespective of a farmer's actual risk or yield history. So they just create the situation where, oh, you have to pay more insurance if you don't use this certified seed, and you know, from Monsanto or whatever. So they create these kind of, yeah, these situations.
Well, they were saying that there's already some things being written about the fact that, so if the farm, say a group of organic farmers decided that they would do nothing but grow their own seed and wouldn't purchase any seed whatsoever, but they've already got a clause in there that says that they would be charged a fee on those seed to the extent of their gross income for that year.
Wow!
So based on their gross income for that year. So it's a pretty draconian. I'm sure that we'll work our way through it, but it certainly we need the public to care.
Yeah.
We do indeed.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being on the show.
So that's Barbara Ebel of Nanoose Edibles.